Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the middle of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles in the center of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia. This is your Halloween special of your Jill Beck Hollywood Hour. And I'm here with my co-host, as always, the scary Dr. Phil Lernes.
Let me ask you something. What's funnier? Listen to this. Okay. Three men and a Rosemary's Baby?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Or a pair of normal activities? Which one's funnier? I'm involved in a Twitter hashtag game, Less Scary Remakes, right now.
I think Three Men and a Rosemary's Baby is funny.
Pretty good. How about a Father of the Bride of Frankenstein?
No.
Sounds like there probably was one.
Yeah, I think there actually. Was. There would right. be. That
Three Men and a Rosemary's Baby. I am Phil Lernes. This is Halloween. They're not booing. They're just shouting boo.
Boo. Boo earns.
You know.
Hooray. Already off to a stellar start.
I was taking care of some scheduling work.
Fantastic.
On a film project called Night Falls Fast.
Yes.
Last night, and had NBC's, well, kind of an epiphany. An epiphany, unfortunately, I've had before. When you need the same epiphany more than once, it's really quite sad. It's sad. It means you're paying way too much attention to your paperwork. I had in the background NBC's Sunday Night Football.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah. Mm. And during one particular highlight package coming out of a break, it was set to the theme music of your Jill Beck Hollywood Hour. Yeah. We really, really,
really need a new
theme song. We have had some submissions, and, you know, quite honestly, we've decided that none of them kind of fit the tempo, the mood, the tone of this particular show. Some are really interesting, would be really good for other shows, but a little too dark, some a little too portentous.
We're
doing the world news tonight.
we
and
go
now
through.
With the world news tonight
and school closings.
So we really do need one.
Right.
And you know, I've been entreating
listeners.
And quite frankly, some professionals. You know, the B Film Extras did that great theme song to our movie, The Truth Is. Hell, we may just end up using The Truth Is Out There theme song before too long. There's the nice instrumental ramp up. Yeah, maybe we'll try that next week until we get one.
I mean, we got the rights to it.
But I've been working on him to John Lawler, the lead singer and songwriter for the B Film Extras, to come up with a tune for us. And he's busy updating his Facebook relationship status, though, from in a relationship to engaged.
What?
Yes.
Congratulations, Mr. John
Lawler. Yeah.
Wow. Did he pop the question on stage? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. That would have been kind of...
cheesy.
I think it was probably somewhere in an Apple store. That's what I'm predicting.
Okay, that's
which, by the way, is where I'm shopping for their.
Where they're registered?
No, I don't know. I told them to tell me where they're registered, and then to answer the following question: how much should the Apple Store gift card be? That I'll get you. Give till it hurts.
That's funny.
You know that's my
congratulations.
Motto.
That's always nice.
When John Lawler gets engaged. It's always a special day.
It was a special day.
Around here.
We celebrate it once a year, and no, what am I saying? That's just me.
You know, you enjoy I got a big kick, by the way, though, when I decided I had to change the channel last night when I heard our theme song on a football show. And I enjoyed seeing Dean Haglund on YouTube.
What?
TV, yeah.
Now, what channel
Dean
is this on?
Dean Haglund hosts an episode. I don't even know what episode it was.
I must be blocking my own TV station.
It's really bizarre how they have you interact with an audience when you...
don't know.
When you recorded this quite a while ago.
Yeah, I know. But it looks like I'm really interacting, right? I'm dying to see myself on TV because...
Let's just end it there.
I don't know what channel this is on. Where? How did you find this? You just went...
just randomly, passing through channels while doing paperwork.
Who is your internet cable provider?
My internet cable provider would be Time Warner.
That's a problem. Here in downtown Los Angeles, Time Warner is sort of all but shut out somehow. This is a... we are on a DirecTV
Well, you would only have one cable provider anyway. In the area, it's not like you have competition.
Well, they were trying to compete here because they were on either side of the street. That was one side. There was one cable provider for the east side and one for the west side. So, but east side, we have unfortunately, we're one of the ones that when I say if you can't get YouTube TV, call your cable provider. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. As of tomorrow, my cable provider will drop FX, a Speed Network, and all of these ones that I will not get to see. So I'm going to miss It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Well, then maybe I wasn't watching it on Time Warner because I saw that same worrisome ad about them dropping. So no, I was on something that you have because I got that warning too. Couldn't have cared less. You know, seriously, the once every 2 months when I actually have TV on.
Okay. So what it means...
Because with Hulu and with internet and with being able to stream directly to my television, I don't really need TV.
Well, I think this is what they're saying.
No more.
I think that's why they were dropping these networks in the first place. They were probably making too many demands and just going, look, we're not making the money anymore because everybody's just watching off their laptops anyway. So we can't afford your demands for higher fees, so we're dropping all these networks.
What... is Halloween a big deal to you? We've never had a Chilpak Hollywood Hour fall on Halloween before.
No. I always wear the same outfit every year. Wig and the Spock. You know, it's a fallback. I hate to admit it. I don't really put much thought into it.
But when you were a kid, was Halloween a big deal in Canada or not?
Well, it was always really cold. In fact, my horrible Halloween story is...
Because you like horror. You like horror films.
I do.
And, you know, and so one would think for people who are fans of that this time of year is particularly memorable, especially...
Well,
growing up,
somehow it wasn't the scary. It was more the free candy and you run around. I had to go 1 year as a ghost, and it was so cold that my breath was started condensating inside the ghost costume, and then the moisture actually froze the top of my ghost sheet to my forehead, so I started getting this wicked ice cream headache as the wet... ghost sheet.
Ooh, that's spooky. That's a scary story.
It started hurting. And then, so my dad, to save my head, put his fingers in the eye holes and ripped my ghost thing off my forehead, which made me cry even more. So it was most traumatic of all.
Who can forget gathering around, you know, with the autumn chill in the air and the smell of leaves burning for the, you know, and the hayride and the bonfire and all gathering around roasting marshmallows, hearing the eerie story of the Halloween headache.
Okay, you mock my trauma. I'm saying there wasn't roasty fires. They were off in a blizzard. Once every second Halloween, there'd be a snowstorm.
Hey, everybody, within the sound of our voices, we wish you a safe and sane Halloween.
There you go. I hope your ghost costume doesn't freeze to your forehead, and then years later somebody mock you about it.
Now, we were in Costa Mesa, California on Friday night.
Yes, you were.
Well, you were.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I consider
that Orange County. I don't know why that's Costa Mesa.
Well, the name of the city... Orange County is not a city.
Right.
It's a county, as evidenced by the word county in its name, Orange County. You don't say when you're down here, I'm in Los Angeles County. You say I'm in downtown Los Angeles, right?
I suppose. It just seems over there everything's Orange County. Okay, yeah, so we were in Costa Mesa.
Wow.
You're right. Technically, that's what it was.
Okay, we were in Orange County.
See? Doesn't that just have roll off
in an underground bunker. We went to opening night of South Coast Rep's revival of Horton Foote's classic. The Trip to Bountiful.
Lovely production.
And how about those sets?
Oh, my God. A full two-story house that rolls out on stage with the trees in the front yard? How is that even done?
One review... that I read gave a criticism. Yeah, you know, the reviewers go on opening night and along with your friends in podcasting, Dean and Phil Ernest.
We went.
And they criticized on just one thing, which was they thought it might have played better in the second theater. Remember the theater where we saw Circle Mirror Transformation?
Yeah.
Which is a house of instead of 500 plus, 300 plus. plus.
Right.
Because they said that, you know, really, here's a play that's about intimacy, and the intimacy might play better in a more intimate setting.
Mm.
Of course, the sets that they designed certainly took advantage of the larger space.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so we went to the after party.
What fun was that?
It was big fun.
Delicious,
swanky place, right? The Circle Club, I think, is what it's.
The
it's
Circle a, it's Center, a, Center Club.
Center Club. It's yeah. by membership only. This yeah. club, but we're part of this invite only opening night and after party, and we go underground. Into this
it
place.
Was underground, wasn't it?
It was underground.
Yeah,
because at first I was thinking, okay, we've got to be lost because we're going into a parking garage that is built into the side of this grassy knoll.
Of some sort.
And then we go downstairs. So we're truly underground. And there's this private club down there.
Plus there's an open garden area. Where people were outside. I didn't get to that part.
Yeah, very strange.
Very strange
and designed clearly to withstand the coming zombie apocalypse and nuclear winter.
That's right. As it is with a private club.
And Patrick O'Sullivan, the creator of All About Walkin', very talented guy, great person. He was there hanging out with us. And he actually said to me at one point, you know, when we were glancing around in some of the other little rooms, that this seems like where, you know, the GOP, for those who aren't aware, that's the Republican Party, where, you know, the people who run the GOP gather together every year to decide, you know, how the next 10 years are going to go.
A secret, like, Bilderberg group kind of meeting?
Well, so I found a, with the help of some of the serving staff, a private little office supply room to store some of my stuff because there wasn't a coat check or anything like that.
I see, right.
So I wanted it to be safe, and so they said, "Yeah, just put it in here, and you know, here's how you get back in afterwards." And so afterwards, now with a couple glasses of wine in me,
woo-hoo!
I decided to look through this.
Oh my God!
And apparently. This place does headquarter annual meetings of the Brookings Institute.
No, the Brookings Institute.
Yeah, I in trouble for talking about what I may have taken? That has their whole like budget and outlay for the year. And
you took that?
Yeah.
No,
I just wanted a souvenir from like my Brookings Institute meeting. Brookings Institute, again, for those who don't know, is a very influential think tank organization.
Say, a right-wing think tank.
Among other things, they are included in a piece in The Truth Is Out There.
Yes.
Because back, was it in the 1950s, the Brookings Institute were the ones that issued the report to the government saying that they must never acknowledge the existence of extraterrestrials because it would end life as we know it.
Right.
On this planet.
Yeah, the panic would be over.
And we show that a little clip of that report in the movie.
Right.
But anyway, so they're still going strong. Brookings Institute.
Did you find that report lying around?
No. And new reports, glossy new reports with photos of men looking very pleased with themselves.
Right. Which they didn't have that technology in the 50s. Clearly, they couldn't have done that. Wow, that's fascinating. I'm glad you went and had a little wander around.
And you ran into a... Now, was this an old friend of yours?
An old friend, yes. Yeah? We had improvised from years ago, LA Theater Sports. He was in amongst all of that. And I see him many times when I go to England. He's always a favorite at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I'm talking about improvising great Mr. Mike McShane, ladies and gentlemen. He's not here. I just thought I'd introduce him.
Please hold all applause till the end so that all the graduates can hear their names.
Mike McShane, who you may know from Whose Line Is It Anyway, the British version.
Right.
And he was one of the few to do the crossover to the American version because he is from San Francisco. And
He is from San Francisco. That's how you...
But he got cast into the British version
I
of Whose
see
Line.
Why he made the crossover.
And then he crossed over when they did the American
version. Of course, Proops also was...
Proops as well. Yeah, the two of them actually worked together. And also, great guy. He did some great shows in the West End that I would say I can't remember the names of. He just told me. He went through his resume. And why should I do it here? Because I know you had a long talk with him, too.
So, also what came up while we were there at the after party, Patrick O'Sullivan actually asked me how we decide what topics we're going to discuss.
Fantastic.
On your Chilpack Hollywood
it's
Hour.
It's so easy.
And I said to him,
yep.
I said to him, well, it's very easy. It's your Chilpack Hollywood
exactly.
Hour.
Exactly.
So, Patrick, one of the things we're going to discuss on this week's show is your question. How do we decide what to discuss on this week's show?
And as you often hear, we have our production meetings in front of everyone where we discuss. Basically, you come in with a list of things that have caught your fancy, and I basically either talk about them and or have some bugaboos up my butt about something,
well,
and then
you,
we go from there.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, it's not like you completely check out during the week. Like, you do say to me, like you did on Friday, did you see the tweet from so-and-so? Did you see the email from so-and-so? And then if I say that I did, then you let it go.
Right.
And so there was the tweet, for example, from one of your followers on Twitter, and people can follow me playing the Less Scary Remix hashtag game on Twitter at twitter.com/PhilLarinus.
Mm-hmm.
They can write offensive things about your movie, The Truth Is Out There, twitter.com/dhaglund.
Yeah, or non-offensive things, either.
Yeah, loving things would be nice,
too.
No, but of course, we don't like to deal strictly in the positive, so we do tend to focus on those occasional things that people write. And boy, someone writing something about The Truth Is Out There. And again, you know, if you don't like a movie, you don't like a movie. Good on you. And of course, everything you say, especially in terms of our movie, The Truth Is Out There, it's just one of those strange movies where it's so clear that whether you like it, whether you dislike it, whether you dismiss it, whether you want to go further, you're just revealing about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost critic proof because all it does is highlight
where you're at in relationship to these things.
And your psyche and all that sort of thing. So when you get something that seems to be vicious.
So this person
learned something.
Said, don't come to The Truth Is Out There expecting to find the truth, because instead of revealing the truth is obscured underneath all the wing nuts. That was that
the
word
keyword,
is an
nuts.
Actual obviously what I've already said is more than 140 characters, so I'm using more gentle language,
right?
But the one word that I am particularly quoting is wing nuts, and the point is that this viewer thought that The Truth Is Out There obscured the truth underneath the voices of all these wingnuts. By giving voice to so many wingnuts, the truth is obscured.
Right.
And what is your response to something like this?
You know, this is that immediate judgment that one has towards the people. And as we show in the movie, that if you reserve your judgment, you hear not bits of truth, but bits of value even. Because what we found in The Truth Is Out There is the truth is subjective ultimately, but each person, regardless of what your immediate judgment is of them, has something of value to say. And so by immediately going, they're all wingnuts, you miss out on some really incredible information.
I realized that when my response was disappointment, and we've had kind of this reaction, just not to the intensity on the part of especially young male viewers seem the most inclined towards this this need to kind of judge and place a hierarchy on the value of the voices within the film.
Right.
To do that instant delineation of, okay, this is good, this is bad, this is, you know, instead of saying, what can we build from all of it? But the disappointment that I find that I have to a greater and greater degree is this fallacy that people choose to believe in, that the truth can be heard if we silence enough voices
right,
in order for the truth to emerge.
Right.
I mean, because that's the point being expressed. The truth is being obscured in our film because we're letting so many wingnuts speak.
Right.
If we hadn't done it, then the truth might be able to emerge.
Right. We would have found the one non-wingnut.
So the answer is, you know, shut up so the truth can be spoken.
Right.
What? Shut up and tell me.
Right. Shut up and tell me.
Really, again, this fallacy, and I realized that it's a disappointment that I find when I walk forward into many and engage in many different walks of life that have nothing to do with our film, I get very disappointed whenever there's an attempt to silence anyone.
Any one voice.
You know, because, and often why that, what gets shouted to try to silence that voice is untrue, liar, false. You yell this at people to try to, you know, quiet them down. The example that I would give is now a couple weeks old, but Herman Cain, the GOP front runner, at least he was last I checked in terms of the polls.
Right.
He, who's in a whole mess of trouble right now that has nothing to do with it.
That seems bad.
His trouble a couple weeks ago came from when he said he knows homosexuality is a choice. And of course, many groups, many people outraged by this, seeking to silence him, using, well, you know, hatred. Expressing that hatred.
Right.
Stop doing that. You know, immediately going to the, and understandably feeling hurt by his words. At the same time, though, going so far as to seeking to silence what they deem as hateful expression.
Right.
And, of course, the whole idea behind freedom of speech you know, is that maybe the hateful expression, though we would all seek to elevate beyond it, at least once it's expressed, we can deal with it.
Right.
Honestly. But I was really disappointed, kind of, in the desire to shout him down. Because when he says he knows homosexuality is a choice, rather than in my opinion or my belief is, when he says he knows it, it strikes me the only way he could know that is if he himself were actually attracted to men sexually and chose not to act on it.
Right.
That's the only way he could know it's a choice as opposed to believing it's a choice. So I say, Herman Cain, tell us more of this knowing about homosexuality being
a choice. Come to know
this. I would like to hear more, not less. No. Tell me more of this personal knowledge that you have. And I think the truths that could come forward then might be quite illuminated.
Quite illuminated, I would say.
So rather than silence, no, please say more.
Please say as much as you can about this, because that would be the fascinating line. And, you know, I guess that's the point of everything, is for every person you say is hateful or a wingnut, that then the more they express, the more you will find you'll go past that immediate judgment label. You know, I'm reminded of Peter Davenport from the UFO Reporting Center, who said, you know, I don't know if we left that clip in or not, but he said, this is the youth of today, for some reason, keep calling the UFO Reporting Center. And he is so disappointed.
We did not include it because it seemed, you know, we'd have to put in so much stuff about what kind of calls he's been getting.
Right.
Otherwise, it just comes off seeming like he's a cranky old man saying, hey, you kids, get out of my yard, which couldn't have been further from the truth. So there wasn't really any place to do it without, you know, making it be about these offensive calls. And we didn't want it to be about offensive behavior in any way.
No.
But it is interesting now that you say it, because we wondered where it kind of came from.
Right.
But
now we could.
Because I think when we were young, we would have thought that the kind of work he was doing was cool.
Right.
And now this attitude of wanting to reject it.
And reject all of this stuff. I don't know. Are we that old? Have we become old hippies?
We've become so old we've outlived our usefulness, which was short-lived to begin with.
I don't think we had much to begin with.
And we should probably point out that we will be traveling with The Truth Is Out
There. Why don't we point that out?
The film is in Chicago, actually, this weekend.
November 5th.
November 5th. Some university there.
Yes, the University of Chicago.
Yeah, well, we'll have a link on the description of this page.
Yes, and not only that, but it's also at the Truth Is Out There website.
Okay, great. Which is truth-is-out-there.com.
Very easy.
truthisoutthere.com. And of course, you can order your copy of The Truth Is Out There at that website. You can order it on DVD, 2-disc DVD, Blu-ray. You can order a digital download edition. And it's available many, many places throughout the world. So visit the website. We hope you do.
Yep.
We will also be traveling for a screening of The Truth Is Out There in Seattle on November 22nd, And you and I will be there.
That'll be awesome.
And Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Yes.
On Thursday, November 24th. What we call here in the United States, Thanksgiving. What they call there in Canada, Thursday.
Thursday. Yeah, my favorite day. And that'll be fun because there will also be a special late night show with me and all my old improvising pals that I've started with many 20 years ago. We'll all be reuniting on stage for the first time ever. A late night show after the screening.
Very exciting.
Yes. I think those would be two separate ticket prices. I would imagine that some who want to see the documentary don't want to stay for the improv, and those who want to do both, because, you know, I have to cut checks for all these guys that will be on stage with me.
All right. This is a great meeting.
I have a great meeting like that, so we'll figure that one out.
Now we don't only just have production meetings, we have accounting meetings. This is fantastic. So we'll be traveling with it throughout this month again, and I just, to put a kind of a capper on this whole conversation about, the young people and trying to...
Disappointment?
Well, just silence them, yeah. By calling someone a wingnut and putting them to the fringe, I was on Clyde Lewis's show again this week.
Oh, yes.
Talking about the thinning of the veil that comes as Halloween approaches and discussing paranormal experiences. And, we got on briefly one of our favorite topics, one of the things that really makes Clyde and myself kindred spirits, which is the real passionate desire to take stories that are existing at present on the fringe of society and bring them into the center,
right,
so that we can all collectively, discuss them and maybe learn from them and maybe be inspired by them and maybe find ways in which they belong in the center. Because quite frankly, sometimes the outsider is the ultimate insider, because the outsider can connect the dots and see how things things work. I'm constantly reminded in this political climate of Ron Paul. Yeah. And there are so many people who we meet as we travel around who really are they really admire many of the things Ron Paul stands for, especially when it comes to economics.
Right.
And this is not to say that I agree or disagree with anything he says, but I am struck by how many people say something along this line to me. He makes so much sense economically. It's too bad he's so much on the fringe in so many other ways.
Social and
And I am really quick to point out that, he's been saying the same thing economically for more than two decades now.
Right.
And these ideas that you embrace as being in the center put him on the fringe economically.
Economically 20 years ago. Yeah.
And it's not like he put himself there. We put him there. So when we say it's too bad he's out on the fringe, well, then why don't we invite him back in?
Right.
Because we put him there. And also, whenever, you have really good ideas, sometimes you are going to be 20 years ahead of the time.
It's true.
And that's going to put you out there. And if we don't learn to embrace those on the outside, those in the fringe, well, then the only people with whom they will engage and exchange ideas are other people out on the fringe.
Exactly.
So, lo and behold, wow, again, it's too bad.
He's
out on the fringe in all these ways. Well, we put him there.
We can invite him back from the fringe.
Right. We seek to, still to this day, what was the old thing in tragedian times, like in Greek tragedies, you would banish? Is it banishing?
Banish, yeah, the exile. You banish people, yes.
And we really do seek to do that opinions.
Opinionally, yeah, we culturally
geographically banish anyone or exile them, but we do
socially
seek to banish and exile certain types of thought. And we do it within ourselves, too. We banish whatever kind of behaviors or thoughts or patterns that we really don't like within ourselves.
Which is how Herman Cain knows homosexuality is a choice.
That's funny. And quite frankly, when you think of how many family values Republicans then go trolling for sex in men's bathrooms,
right,
it is interesting, isn't it? How that stuff they seek to
banish.
They go so far as to try to banish it through legal actions, and then it comes
manifests
up within themselves.
Yes, always fascinating. So, okay, so...
How are we doing on time?
Well, this is a great question, because we are now at the halfway point.
We are at the halfway point.
How did that
happen? I think we should get to some more emails that we've received.
Because this is your Chiltpack Hollywood
Hour. So we have three, and it'll probably be able to take us through most of the rest of the show. The first one comes to us, and it involves social platforming called Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Now, are you familiar with Stitcher?
No, I've seen an invite to Stitcher, but I never follow it like I've never followed names with a Z or a Z.
Well, this is a social platform, and apparently they've heard about your Chiltpack Hollywood Hour, and they want to carry it. And so,
that's delightful.
So I'm wrote a little note. This comes from Rachel Eaton, the director of content partnerships at Stitcher.
Fantastic.
And I'm letting her know that instead of responding to her email in writing, we would be discussing it on the show.
Fantastic.
And she can listen to hear what our response might be.
Well, what do we know about
invitation.
Stitcher?
Here's the email. Hello, John. I handle the content partnerships with Stitcher Radio, the leader in on-demand news and talk mobile apps.
Right.
We work with thousands of content partners to deliver their shows free of charge to a growing mobile audience.
Fantastic.
Congratulations on the success of your podcast efforts. Based on content requests from our listeners, it seems to have quite a strong following and is in hot demand on Stitcher.
Wow.
We have received a number of requests from Stitcher listeners over the past few months to include Chiltpack Hollywood Happy Hour on the Stitcher platform, and we would be thrilled for the opportunity to add it to our content lineup. I'm not going to bother reading about their affiliate program or anything like that.
No, but you know what? Chiltpack Hollywood Happy Hour. We should do that in the second half of the show. It's Chiltpack Hollywood Happy Half Hour. I'm now going to crack a beer.
Maybe once every month we'll do a just Hollywood Happy Hour.
Chiltpack Hollywood Happy Hour. Just liquored up.
Dear Rachel Eaton.
Dear Rachel Eaton.
There's no one associated with the show named John.
John.
And
maybe the producer.
And our
middle
show
name John.
Is...
the Chiltpack Hollywood Hour.
Chiltpack Hollywood Hour, yeah.
But we are very happy to do it. So technically, maybe she was inferring to our own emotional state as we do the show.
No. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
So let's hear what she has to say about those things before we even entertain any further being part of a Stitcher social platform.
To defend her, I imagine she's very busy. She's putting out the feelers to many a show.
Sure, no doubt.
And so there's
no doubt.
Easy way.
If you can't get that right... We've been in content providing partnerships in the past, haven't we?
Yes,
on
we
this
have.
Show.
Jackalope and, Radio?
Well, we love Jackalope
they
Radio.
They call me bro all the time
right?
on my
we
Facebook.
We love Jackalope. We
I love that.
Talk Superstation.
Talk Superstation.
Talk Superstation.
Always carrying us.
We love them. We have been in longstanding content providing partnerships with other people mm-hmm. with whom we are no longer. And we were with them for a long time, largely because we were lazy. And we were
things never change.
Bastard stepchildren, were we not?
Yes.
Redheaded stepchildren.
We were at the bottom of the pecking order.
So it just seems to me that, you know, if in your first reach out to us saying how much you want to have us as part of your platform...
People requesting us.
Yeah, get the name of the show and maybe one of the host's names right.
I know. There is a picture of both of us, and the name Dean Haglund does...
we're getting a lot of heat off the name Dean Haglund.
Dean Haglund.
It's YouTube TV's Dean Haglund.
I'm YouTube TV's Dean Haglund.
And...
I have to call my cable provider and go see myself.
And collectively, of course, Dean Haglund and Phil Larenas are... Your friends in podcasting.
Your friends in podcasting. The royalty of podcasting, according to Succotash
Now,
Radio.
You know, our new part that we've announced every week, we've been actually doing it for a while, and it just suddenly occurred to me that it is a regular feature now, and maybe I should come up with regular theme music for it, but it's the Chiltpack Hollywood Hour Lawsuit of the Week.
Lawsuit of the Week. Go for it.
Revisiting one of the past ones regarding the lawsuit over falsehoods in advertising when it comes to movie trailers.
Movie trailers,
specifically
yeah.
the Drive lawsuit. Erica Fraga wrote... to us this week, why bother with movie, extended or not, trailers if the true premise of the film is not advertised?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Well, that's, to make money.
To make money, yeah.
To get people into the seats.
Because it's going to be hard to say, well, here's a psychopath who drives a car. Who?
Well, and as what we said is what so often is memorable about our favorite films is the way that they make us feel is the tone of them.
Right.
And that is the hardest thing to actually market is tone.
Right.
It's one of the things that I feel best about in terms of our trailer for The Truth Is Out There. Because and some reviewers have actually gone so far as to write that we've made a trailer that absolutely should be seen before watching the feature because it really lets you know the tone of the film going in. You that way you get to open up. You don't have to go in with your arms folded going, well, okay, are they making
thing?
Fun of anything or are they endorsing anything or are they angry or am I going to walk away fearful? Am I going to walk away?
Right.
The sense of fun and exploration and kind of lighthearted adventure is captured in the trailer. And,
right.
And of that I am...
And to watch the trailer...
I am justly proud.
They're well done.
They can see it at our website.
Yeah.
truth-is-out-there.com.
Very good.
So that's why, Erica, that they bother. But she was pointing out that sci-fi goddess Mila Jovovich tweeted that her latest film, The Three Musketeers, was family-friendly and not at all like what was being advertised.
Really?
Yeah. And encourage folks to go out and see it. Now, Erica hadn't seen the film, so she couldn't really comment on whether Mila Jovovich was
correct.
But two statements about false advertising in movie trailers tell me there is something up. That's what Erica wrote. Mm. Seems like it can be anything from lazy advertisers to lack of communication between the filmmakers and studio.
Yeah, nah.
And there's a couple things here. I think laziness is part of it because it is, again, it's difficult to capture tone, so therefore we're not even going to try to do what's difficult. But a lot of times these marketing campaigns are created before even the script is finished.
Absolutely. A, it's created before the script is finished. And with in terms of marketing now, in terms of the amount of demographic research that's done, in terms of the amount of algorithm, mathematical components that are placed into how and what and how many advertisers versus what spot to find, what census demographics, that now it's become much more a science. Well, I still think it's a pseudoscience, but there's much more input to plug in.
Right.
And much less, let us sit down, watch this movie, and creatively think exactly how we're going to sell it. That's almost secondary to exactly what this demographic is, how much this costs, and what are we going to spend to get how many seats in these theaters.
I think, you know, don't kid yourself. I'm someone who actually thinks that advertising certainly at one point was an art.
Yes.
There was a real art to it. And now they believe that it's a science.
Right, right. They convince themselves there's a science because of the sheer amount of information that is out there regarding who and what. You know, us being on Facebook in itself is a demographic profiling that then is used by advertisers for this very thing.
And this is why, you know, I mean, I get back to this idea of trying to capture the tone and how people will feel. You know, advertising is storytelling as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling the story of how you're going to feel if you come see our show, come see our movie, buy our product, do whatever.
Right.
That's the story. We're telling a story, and you are the lead in that story.
Right.
In terms of this is the experience you're going to have. The thing is, Erica, I think there's many of us who would rather not even now watch trailers. I watch trailers after I've seen the film.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm blessed in that I get to, for example, at the Directors Guild, see, you know, several films each month that I don't even know anything about because I know I'm going to see them anyway.
So why bother?
Right. I'm just going to go see them in these advanced screenings. And then I get to go back and I get to see, okay, how are these being marketed?
Mm-hmm.
Especially on ones that I really like or ones that I think are really going to be challenging. So it's fantastic because I go in with no preconceived expectations, which
right.
so often is what focuses how much we either like or dislike, depending on how close to our expectations it lands.
Right.
So there are many of us who don't want it. At the same time, I do get why trailers show more and more, why they give away more and more, because people feel busier and busier. They have more and more limitations of time and money, and they want to know that they're getting what they're paying for. And the trailer is the promise to them that they're getting what they pay for. And what has happened in some of these recent cases is people getting pissed off because not that they were shown too much, but what they were shown wasn't true.
Right. That was
they
inaccurate.
Didn't have a problem with being shown a lot. They had a problem with it being inaccurate.
Right. And they probably would, well, would they have then gone and seen the movie had they had an accurate trailer?
Probably not. Not,
but somebody else would have.
Someone else would have. And this gets back to our conversation that, you know, you're doing it because you want to get as many people into the audience at one time.
Right.
And I think you can even convince yourself with advertising of, hey, even if we lie to get them in there, we've made such a great film, we have such a great film that, and when I say we, I mean the filmmakers have made such a great film that once they're in there,
they're going
to love
it.
Us for
right.
having them there. But no one likes to be fooled in anything,
right.
even something good.
Yeah,
you don't
it's
like
true.
It. It's why people don't like surprise parties. The only people who like surprise parties are the people planning them.
Oh, gee whiz. I got to make a call. Sorry. Anyway, the point is here that I think that you have made a movie for $50 million. You then have a marketing budget of, say, the same or less, let's say 20
maybe
million.
More. Maybe more,
yeah. Depending. And therefore, you have numbers that you got to hit in order to make that money back. And you got to do that in that opening weekend because of how all the contracts work with the distributors and the show. So you're not even going to care if you, what you're showing is accurate at that point. Once you get involved in this accounting mathematical mindset, you can totally subtract yourself from the fact that this is a artistic creation, that advertising could be and once was an artistic expression as well, and that by then going into sheer numbers and statistics and all of that, once you get your head on that math side, you fall over a cliff, and I don't think I know anyone who balances the two of them.
No, it's really difficult. Now, the actual Chilpack Hollywood lawsuit of the week.
Ah, oh, here it is.
Comes to us courtesy of Sylvester Stallone and the Expendables. bad week for the Expendables.
What happened?
Of course, shooting Expendables 2 in Bulgaria.
Ouch.
Where so many films that I did the behind-the-scenes documentary were made for the same company, New Image Millennium.
Ah, New Image.
Anyway, a stuntman was killed during the shooting of Expendables 2. That is not, at least as of this writing, the lawsuit of the week. The lawsuit of the week goes back to Expendables 1.
Uh-huh.
Marcus Webb has sued Sylvester Stallone for copying his script, allegedly. Allegedly copying his script, the Cordoba caper, and turning it into the Expendables. So for truly a bad week for Sly Stallone.
Right.
Death of a Stuntman on Expendables 2 and this lawsuit.
Copyright
but it's
lawsuit.
Even a worse week to me for writer Marcus Webb, who is leveling the lawsuit because he's basically announced in the headlines of papers throughout the world, nobody really needs to bother reading anything he's written if he's the guy responsible for the Expendables.
Well, theoretically, Stallone did a rewrite of the concept. I would think the Cordoba caper, which, you know, as
trips,
a title...
Trips off the tongue.
I like it. Now that I think about Cordoba caper. It's what my rich Corinthian leather with the Cordoba caper.
That's my Halloween outfit, is the Cordoba caper.
Well, you know, here's the problem always with ideas and films ideas. I mean, there's nothing... unusual, a bunch of aging action stars all come together in a movie. That's sort of like...
Mercenaries.
That's an idea I would have while eating lunch. I don't know if I call it Cordoba caper.
Marcus Webb, Akira Kurosawa just called. He's upset with you for copying Seven Samurai.
Seven Samurai, yes. So, again, you have... you know, I support any writer who says, man, this was taken from me, and I support them to fight that. At the same time...
You know, look, I have no desire really to work in mainstream or big-budget filmmaking, except that I want to be able to go into one set of meetings at a studio to pitch something and be able to pitch this. Okay. There are two cops... One is a grizzled veteran who doesn't play by the rules.
I'm listening.
The other, a streetwise young rookie.
Uh-huh.
Think urban.
I got it.
At first, here's the wrinkle. They don't get along.
No.
They don't like each other.
Hilarious.
Wouldn't it be awesome? I would just love to pitch this.
And how does that end?
Now, speaking of development and pitches, our old friend Bob Pliskin expects a rant. And I don't even know, given how much I've been talking about other things and my disappointment in other things, I really have any fuel left in my soapbox. But specifically...
You put fuel in your soapbox?
I don't know. I got nothing.
Why do you do that?
But, you know, it's the last day of the month. I don't have the new... I don't get the new material till tomorrow.
That's right.
Back-to-back Independence Day sequels have been announced.
Yes.
They were announced, by the way, here first on your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, because if you go back a couple years and remember to when I went to the not knowing it was the red carpet premiere, when I went in ripped up jeans carrying leftover pizza, but when I went to the red carpet premiere of Hurt Locker,
that's
and
right.
was sitting next to a couple Emmerich. People including Dean Devlin's wife, and I overheard the fact that the deal had been done. Dean Devlin, writer-producer of Independence Day. Roland Emmerich is the director-producer of Independence Day. And the current film Anonymous.
Ah.
No film that I will ever not see will make me nearly as angry as that film. I love the review from David Edelstein about Anonymous. This is the film that says that, you know,
Shakespeare
was a fraud, didn't write it. His comment was, never mind about anything else in the film. Those who know nothing about Shakespeare will be bored senseless by this film. Those who know almost anything about Shakespeare will be annoyed beyond belief. I thought that was great.
That's awesome.
That was great. Good work, Roland Emmerich. You hit 100% on that one.
Out of the park.
Anyway, so back-to-back Independence Day sequels with or without Will Smith, because he's asking for $50 million. They'll shoot them back-to-back. It is a lot, though, in these days of uncertain box office, where he seems to be maybe the last
remaining
certain thing.
Right.
Maybe you got to pony up that kind of money, given the huge worldwide marketing costs and everything. Just pay him up front. And for him, it's worth it because, you know what? He really enjoys spending time with his family.
Yeah.
And it's a big commitment. I mean, to shoot those back to back, might that not be up to a year for him?
I would think, if it's big action.
So anyway, what do you think? You got a rant in you about back-to-back Independence Day?
You know,
Day
it's
sequel?
Funny. I just been...
I just feel so beaten down. It's like, you know, it's like, well, wait a minute. We're having two more. We just announced back-to-back Transformers sequels. What's the difference? I don't know.
Here's the thing. I just wrote a chapter in the new upcoming book from the Comedy Film Nerds about all about filmmaking. And one of my chapters is about sequels and redos. And I clearly state that sequels are all about money and or marketing. And rarely, now and then, the original storyteller still has some passionate story he wants to tell about those characters and that sort of thing.
Right.
In this case, I am guessing that this is strictly about money. And that if what they're doing very smartly, though...
Like the original.
Was the original... Yeah, well, we can go into that.
Let's talk about the original. Were you a fan of the original?
I do have all the action figures.
It became popular very quickly to bag on the original.
It did.
And, of course, it was brilliant at the way it unified the world, not only within the story, but unified the world as a box office film-going entity.
Right.
It really achieved that in a way no other film had.
And it was the beginning of destruction porn, where it blew up every major...
Well, was it the beginning? I mean, here's what I thought also.
Okay, you know, the middle of it?
It combined three things, all of which I had great fondness for.
Aliens?
It had this wonderful B-picture... 1950s B picture approach.
True enough.
It was a B picture in terms of its tone, in terms of its style, in terms of its acting.
Ethic.
And I loved that. Yeah. Okay. It also took the two types of blockbusters that were introduced to us in the 1970s and combined them. Because, of course, the Star Wars and the space opera and kind of thing, the science fiction kind of blockbuster. But prior to the science fiction blockbuster, what had been the one blockbuster genre that had worked consistently throughout the 70s.
Disaster movies.
And it combined them. I just rewatched, as a matter of fact, Airport and Towering Inferno.
Towering Inferno.
Which are both still so much fun.
Totally fun. Strap yourself in.
So I have great fondness for it, and I thought that in this city, in this industry especially, it was kind of this sort of de rigueur knee-jerk to be too sophisticated for the film.
Right. Yeah.
And but it was good fun.
It was good fun. So I am not surprised that they're doing these sequels and doing them now. I mean, as a point to where suddenly it's become harder and harder to get anybody to go see any movie anywhere, anyhow, to do something that was a hit with the Will Smith, if you can afford him, seems like a smart move.
Now, though, 15 years later, mm-hmm. as we're talking about it, it would be 17, 18 years after they probably come out, right, from
right.
the original, which
yeah.
I think was 96.
96 or 7, yeah.
Can the world be united in that way? I mean, I remember the great poster at the end of the opening weekend when it clearly was this huge hit, and it showed the mothership, and it showed the new poster, and it had this tagline, "Get off our planet." And but with how fractious everything is around the world, I mean, do people want to see? Is yeah, there the possibility of
Well, I think there
that.
Is because, you know, you say it's fractious, and yet here we have Occupy Wall Street going on in some, 1,600 cities right. around the world. We have all of us connected through our social media platforms, including the other one that just emailed us.
So are you saying that the Independence Day sequels are about the Occupy Wall Street movement, getting the aliens off the planet?
I would say that that would be a potential. If the first one was an anti-feminist rant, then perhaps these could be an anti-corporate.
What's so fascinating to me, I will say this, and we're not ranting, Mr. Pliskin, sorry. What is fascinating, and this would be especially fascinating if, let's say, you had some sort of real brilliant futurists
yes.
writing this material
that
instead of,
brilliant.
Let's say, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin. You're talking about a sequel 17 years after the fact to a world that branched off from our own and is now a completely fictional universe because it was set in our world.
Right.
And then
these things
so
crashed.
Much destruction around the world takes place.
That
so you're talking about what would that world 17 years later be like? A Rod Serling.
A traumatized, how much environmental damage was done by all these giant ships crashing
there
onto...
There certainly would be some really interesting places to go, although I'm not sure that any of those places are huge four-quadrant popcorn entertainment.
Not yet, but I would think that, you know, when you think of Alien to Aliens, and the jumping-off point was, oh yeah, they left the aliens on that... that other world planet, it's now been colonized, go back to that. I mean, that was a simple idea that then motorized that whole movie, and it was up to Ripley to go get them off that planet, right?
Believe it or not. see what I did?
Ripley.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Pliskin, that I don't really have the
And I'm in support of this thing. I mean, I'm probably, you know.
At the same time, I did love in the X-Files, Fight the Future, when Mulder urinates on the Independence Day poster.
You did love that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a statement, wasn't it?
Yeah. Two Fox projects, too.
Two Fox. I think, I think that's just called cross-pollinization.
I don't know what that means. Now, development news, on the other hand, I could not be more excited about. The long gestating Bond 23, or if you count them the way I do, Bond 24, because I do consider Never Say Never Again to be canon, especially now that it's actually owned by the same company.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, 23 or 24 is finally in production. They had the first cast reading this past week.
Uh-huh.
And... if you'll recall, of course, we're both huge fans of Casino Royale. You liked Quantum of Solace much more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
We disagreed over the action. One of the reasons that I was disappointed by Quantum of Solace was that although the James Bond, as played by Daniel Craig, was still a really interesting character,
yeah,
the universe he was now inhabiting seemed less interesting than it did in Casino Royale, where right. anything seemed open and possible.
Right. They start narrowing their limits.
And so how would they respond to that? How would the producers respond to it by bringing in writers and directors and characters? What characters could maybe breathe life back into that universe and make it truly interesting again? The way that it, of course, was, you know, with all the many colorful characters during the Sean Connery
absolutely,
era, especially.
Yeah.
Hard to argue with director Sam Mendes, who, of course, did American Beauty and Road to Perdition with Daniel Craig.
Yes.
He's directing Bond 23.
Wow.
And in addition to, you know, your Daniel Craig and your Dame Judi Dench.
Dench as Q.
You've got the Bond girl being played by Naomi Harris, who's so wonderful.
Mm.
She, of course, first came really at least to prominent attention in my eyes through 28 Days Later.
Oh, yeah.
But was quite the breakout in the first couple Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Or Caribbean movies.
Caribbean.
So you've got all them. You
Who's
already,
our villain?
You already had the previously announced Ralph Fiennes playing a very important role. So, you know, you're talking about really good actors. You're getting the sense of it. And then you hear that the villain is being played by Javier Bardem.
Oh, my God.
His first villain role since No Country for Old Men.
Oh, my God.
And what a wonderful thing that they've been doing with these reboots of Bond, these reimaginings of Bond, going back to Casino Royale, where your villain is played by Mads Mikkelsen, who one of the great actors working in Europe, right after The Wedding, and then and I can't remember the actor's name, but the actor who played Mr. Green, the villain in Quantum of Solace, of course, played Bo B in Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Yeah, right.
Did you see the Diving Bell and the Butterfly parody on Simpsons?
No.
Simpsons did a Diving Bell and the Butterfly parody.
Last night?
I think, right. Maybe. I guess. Is it on Sundays?
Yeah, it's a Sunday night.
And LYT rules posited wondering how many people really, what was the percentage of viewers that understood the Diving Bell and the Butterfly parody? My question to him is how many viewers understood Diving Bell and the Butterfly? Anyway, so that's, you know, you think you're rounding out the cast.
Right.
And Sam Mendes lets everyone know that they need to be on time to the table read because a very special guest will be joining them in a major role in the film. And, you know, these people, Daniel Craig, Judi Dench, Ralph Fiennes, Javier Bardem, they're all looking around at each other going, really, someone's going to walk in and impress us. And in comes Albert Finney.
No way.
Yeah.
Playing.
Still in remission from cancer and apparently looking great. And he plays someone who is very influential in the world of foreign service.
Wow.
Maybe Judi Dench, maybe M's boss.
Oh, look at
that. We don't know, but in a major role.
Look
and
at that.
Suddenly, you know, I'm so eager for Bond 23 or 24.
Wouldn't it be sad if he just played like Bond's dad? Just like a cameo?
Apparently it's a major role,
but who
cares if that was...
Right. I know. I mean, I'm just saying I would like it to be part of the political intrigue and not just like, hey, Dad.
Well, again, making that world interesting.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I was going to say, did they not mention in Casino Royale that he was an orphan?
I'm not recalling that off the top of my head, but maybe.
Maybe. So, anyway, well, then it could be his dad, which would be horrible. Even worse.
I wrecked it.
Now
in one
I want to do a rant about that. So we're almost out of time. I did want to mention, I saw two new films that are big Oscar hopefuls.
Yep.
One is My Week with Marilyn. And this is a film about the making of The Prince and the Showgirl, which starred Sir Larry Olivier and Marilyn Monroe.
Yep.
And this is a film based on a memoir by the third assistant director who carried on a one-week affair with Marilyn. On the set. Michelle Williams, so wonderful, plays Marilyn Monroe. One reviewer quite accurately described the whole thing as kind of not seeming like a film so much as just the marketing campaign for Michelle Williams' Oscar campaign. she is tremendous, though. The person who has really just got the role of a lifetime in it is Kenneth Branagh as Olivier. He's wonderful. He's such good fun. But, you know, the problem with these kind of movies, and when I say these kind of movies, I mean me and Orson Welles, which I enjoyed a great deal.
You loved that
the
movie.
The actor who played Orson Welles was fantastic. My Favorite Year, which was big
Peter
fun.
Tool.
Love the era, the milieu. Love Peter O'Toole is basically Errol Flynn.
Flynn, yep.
The problem with these movies, though, is it's called My Week with Marilyn.
It's called Favorite Year.
Me and Orson Welles, My Favorite Year. The big character that you're going to see is not the main character.
Right.
It's the unknown person from whose point of view it is. And guess what? They are always less interesting than the people around them because those people around them are big stars.
Big stars who are fascinating.
And so there's these films can only be so good. They can never be complete.
Amazing.
And it's a disappointment. Anyway, now I ask you this question. Can a silent film from France set in 1927, shot in Hollywood, win Best Picture? It very well might.
You're talking of The Artist. I'm dying to see this thing.
From the director and stars of the two OSS movies, the ironic spy films from France that played to much acclaim and box office around the world. Nothing could have prepared even their audiences for this. Jean Dujardin won Best Actor at Cannes for this.
Big
and,
buzz.
He is just wonderful in it.
Can't wait.
If you love film at all,
regardless if it's silent or it's cinema,
the cleverness and the love and the affection they bring to it. But it is just so funny and so touching and so inventive and truly, you know, takes its silent films for its lead Yeah, it's big fun.
I'm seeing it.
Certainly a dark horse at this point, but I think it definitely will get nominated for
Best Picture. At Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, we will push that film to the front of the Oscar race.
On our ballot.
That's right. Till then, that ends another episode of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Holidays are coming up. We will be announcing very soon how maybe you can, for the holidays, get the Chill Pack Hollywood Hour listener in your life some very special Chill Pack Hollywood Hour merchandise.
Look at that.
In the meantime, though, if you haven't already, please order your copy of the 4th anniversary bonus episode
Hilarious.
Of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Just write us, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, hollywood@yahoo.com, and send along any questions, anything you want us to talk about to that email address, and we will address it on the air.
Like us at Facebook.
You can like us on Facebook. Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood.
Right.
And that reminds me again, John Lawler, Kelly Johnson, change your Facebook statuses to engaged.
Engaged, please.
And congratulations.
Yep.
We've already mentioned the Twitter. Do we have anything else?
Email. Well, we did that too.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah.
We've done everything.
We've done everything.
Oh my God.
Now it's time for Halloween happy hour. Happy Halloween, everybody.
All right. Till next month.
I'm Dean Haglund.
I'm Phil Larenas.
See ya.